Ronald Reagan had been an actor, a governor, and a spokesman for 20 Mule Team Borax on television's Death Valley days. Now, at the age of 69, he becomes America's first actor president.
The economic ills we suffer have come upon us over several decades. They will not go away in days, weeks, or months, but they will go away. They will go away because we, as Americans, have the capacity now, as we've had in the past, to do whatever needs to be done to preserve this last and greatest bastion of freedom. In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. From time to time, we've been tempted to believe that society has become too complex to be managed by self-rule, that government by an elite group is superior to government for, by, and of the people. Well, if no one among us is capable of governing himself, then who among us has the capacity to govern someone else? All of us together, in and out of government, must bear the burden. The solutions we seek must be equitable, with no one group singled out to pay a higher price. We hear much of special interest groups. Well, our concern must be for a special interest group that has been too long neglected. It knows no sectional boundaries or ethnic and racial divisions, and it crosses political party lines. It is made up of men and women who raise our food, patrol our streets, man our mines and factories, teach our children, keep our homes, and heal us when we're sick. Professionals, industrialists, shopkeepers, clerks, cabbies, and truck drivers. They are, in short, we the people. This breed called Americans. Well, this administration's objective will be a healthy, vigorous, growing economy that provides equal opportunities for all Americans with no barriers born of bigotry or discrimination. Putting America back to work means putting all Americans back to work. Ending inflation means freeing all Americans from the terror of runaway living costs. All must share in the productive work of this new beginning, and all must share in the bounty of a revived economy. With the idealism and fair play which are the core of our system and our strength, we can have a strong and prosperous America at peace with itself and the world. All of us need to be reminded that the federal government did not create the states. The states created the federal government. Now, so there will be no misunderstanding, it's not my intention to do away with government. It is rather to make it work. Work with us, not over us. To stand by our side, not ride on our back. Government can and must provide opportunity, not smother it. Foster productivity, not stifle it. If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Freedom and the dignity of the individual have been more available and assured here than in any other place on earth. The price for this freedom at times has been high, but we have never been unwilling to pay that price. It is no coincidence that our present troubles parallel and are proportionate to the intervention and intrusion in our lives that result from unnecessary and excessive growth of government. It is time for us to realize that we are too great a nation to limit ourselves to small dreams. We are not, as some would have us believe, doomed to an inevitable decline. I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing. So with all the creative energy at our command, let us begin an era of national renewal. Let us renew our determination, our courage, and our strength. and let us renew our faith and our hope. We have every right to dream heroic dreams. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. You can see heroes every day going in and out of factory gates. Others, a handful in number, produce enough food to feed all of us and then the world beyond. You meet heroes across a counter, and they're on both sides of that counter. There are entrepreneurs with faith in themselves and faith in an idea who create new jobs, new wealth, and opportunity. There are individuals and families who take taxes, support the government, and whose voluntary gifts support church, charity, culture, art, and education. Their patriotism is quiet but deep. Their values sustain our national life. Now, I have used the words they and their in speaking of these heroes. I could say you and your, because I'm addressing the heroes of whom I speak. You, the citizens of this blessed land, your dreams, your hopes, your goals are going to be the dreams, the hopes, and the goals of this administration. So help me God.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. If you're just catching this program or listening to Present Shock when everything happens now with Douglas Rushkoff, he argues that we are being overwhelmed by technological advances and looks at how our society is reacting to this new media world. And next week on Great Speeches and Interviews, we'll hear Reinhold Niebuhr rediscovered.
On the same day that Jerry Garcia died, Netscape went public. And I thought, I wonder if the potential that I'm seeing for a new kind of digital media environment is going to be subsumed by the industrial age. It may very well be, but I believe if it is, most of us are going to die. You know, I really believe that. That I think that we've reached the limits of that way of doing things. And I'm trying to create the most appetizing ways of describing what it might be like to live in a world where we have a more kind of a steady state, sustainable approach to life together, where we stop looking at life of our as individuals or our life as a nation as this thing that we're going to go win, and rather this thing that we're going to keep doing.
Kind of, are you taking the media revolution that's shooken us up and changed our lifestyle and using it? Okay, so our life is different, so we can change all these other things that are different too, like nationhood and like all this other stuff, as opposed to just letting it go back to the way it was.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it will go back to the way it was anyway. I mean, when I look at, and I've gotten to be in the boardrooms, when I look at the way corporations exist now, they're dying. Corporations are sitting on all this money. I mean, corporations live on an economic operating system that was designed to help them collect money. They've gotten really good at collecting money, but they don't know how to make money with their money anymore. Corporate profitability over net corporate assets has been going down steadily over the last 50 or 60 years, you know, to almost nothing. They don't know how to keep doing it. So I feel like that they are at the crossroads too. So I have lots of signs of hope, glimmers of hope. I also think of a genuine media renaissance. I don't call it a revolution because revolutions feel so 20th century too. You know, it's around the clock, around we go, revolution. You know, I think of it more as a renaissance where we retrieve old ideas and they're reborn in a new context. So the kinds of stuff that got repressed by the original Renaissance, you know, when we became centralized, when we became, you know, monarchies with central currency and chartered corporations and all that stuff that got repressed at that time, I feel like those are just picking up. You know, and we're at the beginning of it. These things take hundreds of years to happen, or 1,000 years even, to happen. So I'm trying to remain hopeful at just how infinitesimal some of the signs seem.
Hi. Do you think digital technologies are helping or hurting societal goals like the end of poverty?
I think they can help or hurt. You know, when we're using digital technology to sell more cell phones to more people in less time, and we stick kids in caves to find more molybdenum for them, it's hurting, right? When we use digital technology and open source planning to give developing nations open source blueprints on how to build agricultural machinery right where they are, it's helping. You know, when we use it to exacerbate the monopolies of corporate capitalism, it's hurting. You know, when we use it to allow for peer-to-peer marketplaces to emerge and alternative currencies and new economic models, it helps. You know, so it's you know, I hate to call it a double-edged sword, but it seems to be. You know, it's very, very powerful stuff, which is why I've always been advocating for people to learn how to use it. You know, I feel like a digitally literate population is sort of like a population that knows kung fu. You know, then we can actually, at least if we don't know how to program ourselves, we'll at least be aware of the biases of the digital environments we're inhabiting. Right? We could look at something like Facebook, like I recently did, and I said, yeah, this actually is not fun for me. This is actually making me feel vulnerable and yucky in all these ways. I'm just going to stop. And as long as I'm stopping, I'll publish a big article and make some hay off it, too, and get other people to follow me. You know, there's always that. You know, right for one corporation to attack another corporation. Yeah, it's great. I know, it's not really progress on the grand scheme of things. But to the extent that we feel that we're allowed, even, to make choices about what technologies enhance our lives and what don't, is sort of the beginnings of doing good things with tech rather than bad.
I think it's come up a couple times. One of the kind of obvious reactions to, you know, digital stuff everywhere is let's consider returning back to the way things were, right? So like the narrative of the craftsman,
right,
which now every like whiskey brand seems to like want to tap into, right? I don't know. Yeah, I think you said something really interesting about the like. The values that got repressed before that revolution. So, I mean, I guess I'm just kind of curious for you to expand on that. You touched on indigenous cultures. I don't know, what are some of those values that you might see come back to life?
Right, well, I mean, the beauty of a renaissance is everything old is new again, right? It's not about going back to the good old days. You can't go back. I mean, neither, you know, and I'm a progressive, neither can you lean forward. You know, I love MSNBC's motto, lean forward, you know, is sort of the opposite of Fox's sort of traditional values. You can't go in either way. We're actually right here now, right? But right here now means we can now be available to things that were unavailable to us before. So we do see, I mean, in its more primitive form, you know, you go to Burning Man and everybody's dressed all medieval and Ren Faire and, you know, it gets all like that because that's where we associate those memes from, those activities. The last memory we have of them is the medieval bazaar. So we bring that back. But ideally what we do is bring it back in a new context. So instead of having a peer-to-peer grain-based currency where you're tearing pieces of foil and going to a grain store to get your stuff, you end up with a peer-to-peer currency that's in your iPhone that you can use peer-to-peer authentication and actually, you know, go somewhere else with it. So you bring the old forms. In terms of indigenous culture, though, I mean, I do think that they have access to certain things that we're only now finding again through science. The kinds of stuff, like, gosh, to say, you know, for me to say, oh, we're just figuring out that, you know, there's a lunar cycle, it's like, duh, first, every woman in the world knows there's a lunar cycle, right? Men are like, oh, really? Oh, I get it. There's actually, that goes around. I mean, you know, we're dumb. But, you know, and in terms of Western scientists, to go, oh, you know, every week of the lunar cycle, there's sort of a different dominant mood and character and neurochemistry. You know, you go to any shaman and they'd be like, well, duh. You know, that's called the moon. And there's a first week we call it yaya, and the second week we call it gugu, and the third week, you know what I mean? They have their thing, and that's why we do this. You know, if you go back to the ancient Jewish calendar before the Romans forced Hillel to corrupt it, they had a true lunar calendar that was respecting a lot of these different rhythms, but, you know, we lost that. So yeah, some of it feels really old, and we can find, you know, we can revive some ancient wisdom again. You know, you start reading your Tao Te Ching and stuff, and you start saying, oh, they understood that there was a shape in time. That's what Terence McKenna was really going for, right? With Time Wave Zero, he's like, there's a shape to time, and maybe they knew it, and we can kind of combine that with computers and that. You know, it was sort of like, we had James Joyce who kind of got part of it, we had Terence McKenna who got part of it, and now we're sort of, you know, trying to actually do it.
Okay. Question.
All right. And then we can talk. I'll sign books and stuff and we can talk.
You mentioned before this dichotomy between like presentism and sort of industrialism. How does that logic speak to places like India where like the digital world is superimposed over like a more traditional industrial environment?
Yeah, I don't really, really know.
Sure.
Because I haven't spent time there. I mean, I've ended up thinking more about China, maybe just because they're more in the news, you know, than India. You know, and I look at you know, moments. But I'm looking at it culturally as a spectator, you know, so I look at like the Chinese Olympics and, you know, 10,000 people standing there doing Tai Chi and lock rhythm and stuff. And I'm like, are they trying to demonstrate their industrial age prowess, or are they actually demonstrating an older clock and sense of sync that they're involved in? You know, I sometimes worry for cultures that adopt, you know, like India, that it will adopt a digital age kind of mentality without passing through the same kinds of things. In other words, these are such powerful tools. I mean, I work at a place called Codecademy that's trying to teach code to people. And in America, people who go on Codecademy to learn code are doing it generally because they want to, like, create a product, right? They want to make something and do a startup and learn how to code and then launch an iPhone app. When you get email from people in India, they're like, I want a degree. Can you give me a certificate so I can go and get a job? You know, and when you realize that people are really poor or in some caste that they've never been allowed to do anything, and now they can actually get a job and make some progress, it's like, it's a great and beautiful thing. But then I also look, oh my God, do they even know what they're getting themselves into? You know, if they're going to become the work farms for American digital companies. We already have these sort of, you know, labor mills in China and India where they're doing the kind of boring Amazon Turk repetitive tasks. So, you know, this is a book more about culture than it is about anything else. And yeah, because I'm a Westerner, I'm an American, I'm writing it, really it's way more about us than it is about them. Although I'm really interested, I'm more interested than anything, I'm interested in what their reaction to this will be. In other words, will their reaction, you know, if I get emails from India about this book, will it be, oh my gosh, this is really interesting, we're suffering through these same things, or will it be, oh, you silly Americans, you didn't know this all along? You know, so, it's something I guess I'm going to find out.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
We'll be right back. Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely nights dreaming of a song, the melody haunts my reverie, and I am once again with you. When our love was new, and each kiss an inspiration, but that was long ago, and now my consolation is in stardust of a song. Beside the garden wall, when stars are bright, you are in my arms. The nightingale tells his fairy tales of paradise where roses grew. Though I dreamed in vain, in my heart there always will remain my stardust melody, the memory of love's refrain. Stardust melody, the memory of love's refrain. In my heart, there always will remain my stardust melody, the memory of love's refrain.
Don't know where. That's all, folks.